Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it's my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for supporting your local independently owned bookstore. We all know what a gifted storyteller Roddy Doyle is, and we didn't need the Booker Prize, which he won for Patty Clark, ha ha ha, to tell us that. He's introduced us to many unforgettable characters, including Henry Smart. And while Henry is getting older, he's showing no signs of slowing. We're delighted that Roddy Doyle has returned to the Tattered Cover tonight to reintroduce us to Henry in his new novel, The Dead Republic. Would you please join me in making Roddy Doyle feel welcome?
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and it's a Monday night, so I'm flattered that you've come out. I wouldn't. So I'm going to read a piece from this third novel in the Henry Smart series. I only recently remembered, actually, that I'd given the trilogy a name way back in 1995. It's called The Last Roundup. And I'd forgotten completely that I had actually, because normally names come very late to me, but I gave this one a name before I'd even started writing it, The Last Roundup, but it's only in the last 2 weeks that I realised that I've now written, you know, the whole thing, The Last Roundup. So it's a strange sensation, actually, because when I started the books in 1995, I had hair. You know, it wasn't great, but it grew. It was there. I have photographs. I definitely had it. I had two children. Now I have three. And the youngest of them is starting high school in a couple of months. She wasn't even an idea when I started writing the books. So in a real sense, the books have taken a lifetime. To write, at least. So the first book, A Star Called Henry, narrated by Henry Smart, it tells of his childhood and how he reared himself, I suppose, on the streets of Dublin, and then became involved in the War of Independence, the Irish War of Independence. At the end of that book, he has to leave Ireland, which brings us to the second one, Oh, Play That Thing, which is about his years in America, the 20s and the 30s, and he doesn't remember the 40s too well, but meets John Ford, the film director, at the end of that decade, and that gives me my excuse to bring him home to Ireland into the last book, The Dead Republic. I'm going to read a passage. The difficulty with reading extracts from novels is that you often have to spend ages giving it a context. So I've tried to find a passage that doesn't need too much explaining, that kind of survives by itself. Not quite a short story, but the only thing, there's very little I have to tell you. It's the late 50s, early 1960s, and Henry is the caretaker of a boys' national school, which I think in the United States would be a public elementary school. I declared war, a guerrilla war. I declared, but no one heard me. I always carried my excuse, the mop or a spanner, and I patrolled. Quietly, lightly, I went easy on the limp. I roamed the corridors, upstairs and ground floor, and the three extra rooms hidden away at the back. I stood among the hanging coats, and I waited. All the training came back. I'd never lost it. Boys and staff went past, but they didn't see or hear me. I could stand still for hours. I could withstand the pain that ate its way all through my leg. I could even ignore it. I listened and heard the slaps. I counted them, 4, 5, then the sixth. 6 was as many as I'd tolerate, 6 of the famous best. 3 whacks on each open hand with the leather strap. The limit, I'd allow no more. But then I heard the 7th and the 8th, the 9th, the 10th. I heard the objections killed in the throats of 54 witnesses, the silent outrage, and the terror. I was outside. The boys were inside watching a brute lose control of himself, living it and being destroyed by it. The 3 o'clock bell. Go home, go home. I stepped out from the coats as the door opened, and the boys came out in a long, slow line. Still pale and scared, but ready to laugh and pretend it had been nothing. It was hard to tell which of them had been the victim, but I saw him and I'd remember him. I made my move. I filled the door before the teacher could get out. This was Mr. Mulhare. I didn't know his first name. The job was easier without it. He spoke first. I wasn't going to. Henry, he said, I'll leave you to it. He had his bag, the Mála Scoile, under his arm. He tried to walk around me. I didn't move. He was young, still in his 20s. The latch on the window beyond needs looking at, he said. Good man. I still didn't move. Then I stepped straight into him and shut the door with my heel, just rightly weighted, no big bang or ricochet. He stepped back, nearly fell, to get out from under me. His bag slipped from under the arm. He held it now in both hands. Fuck the latch on the window, I said. He was short and broad. He came from a line of mountain men, but he was scared. He tried to look outraged, but nothing came out of him. If, I said. I stepped on his foot and brought the rest of me forward to meet it. I was a tall man again. If I ever hear you slapping any of the boys again, I said. I stayed still now, hung right over him. I'll kill you, I told him. Slowly. Do you hear me, Mr. Mulhare? What do you mean? I hit him. I backhanded the cunt, sent the slap bouncing around the walls and maps. You know what I mean, I said. If a kid misbehaves, you can slap him. He was still clutching the school bag. He hadn't touched his face where I'd whacked him. It was turning red, and his eyes were catching up. I stepped a bit closer. He was backed up to his desk now. To a maximum of 6, I said. 3 on each hand, but only for the mortal sins. Once in a blue fucking moon. Do you understand me, Mr. Mulhare? I laid off the sarcasm. I threw no extra weight into his name or the mister. He nodded. Good, I said. I'll be outside, always, counting. If I hear more than 6, you're dead. A sharp dig to his gut. My fingers reminded me that they'd been broken before. He dropped the bag, or you'll wish you were dead. I stepped back. If anyone else hears about this, I said, do I have to say more? He shook his head. I know, I said. It's a bit of a shock. I'm the caretaker, yeah? He nodded. He wasn't ready to talk. Your daddy told you all about the War of Independence, yeah? He nodded. And I bet he told you he was in the thick of it, I said. He nodded. Yes, he said, as he picked up his bag. And I bet you never really believed him. He has a medal. They all have fucking medals. I didn't hit him. I was there, Mr. Mulhare, I told him, and I never got a medal. And I didn't have a fucking farm to go home to. I hadn't planned this, but it was coming from somewhere sore right behind my ribs. I moved in close again. I parked right up against him. The school bag was back on the floor. I shoved it aside with the wooden foot, no twinge or protest from the knee. If your dad was ever in the thick of it was because I ordered him to be in the thick of it. Where are you from, Mr. Mulhare? Kilkenny. I know every inch of it, I told him. Every ditch and hiding place. Is your dad still alive? Yes, that's because of me. Thanks. No problem. Do you understand me? Yes. Your dad and his brothers and cousins took their orders from me, and so do you. Yes. Remember that, I told him. All those stories your dad told you, I'm in every one of them. I was there, and now I'm back. I stepped away. I was tired now. I'd gone too far. I was a gobshite, but the teacher didn't think so. He was shaking, trying to gather himself and stay whole. I opened the door. I'll be listening, I told him. I left him there and went up on the roof to do some shaking of my own. I watched Mulhare walk across the yard to the gate and the bus stop up onto the main road. I shook till I stopped and got down off the roof. I locked up and went home. I passed him the next morning. I made sure I did. Morning, Mr. Mulhare. Good morning, Henry. I fixed that latch for you. Oh, thank you. No problem at all, I said. That's why I'm here. I watched him stand at the door of his room. He smiled at the boys who walked past him. He smiled big at every one of them. He looked at me and closed the door. I did the bits of business that made my job and listened. Mulhare didn't use the leather strap at all. I didn't overdo it. I left him alone and the others too. I knew they had a few pints on Friday, the younger ones, after they'd emptied the school and cleaned their blackboards. I saw them gathering around the cars, giddy for drink, boys again, laughing much louder than they had to. They all pushed in. There were 3 cars and 17 of them. They didn't drink local. They wisely kept going, on into town. I wished them well, and I knew Mulhare would eventually yap. He'd move on to the small ones one Friday night, and it would all come out. in one of the Culshie pubs, on the shoulder of a fat nurse from home. He'd tell them what had happened, or he'd tell her. He'd whisper it wet into her ear, and she'd pass it on when he'd gone into the Jacks to vomit. She'd whisper into the ear of her off-duty pal who was sitting beside or on the knee of another of the teachers, or his cousin, the guard. It would be all around the pub and out the back door by the time he'd finished puking and cleaned himself. The band in the corner would be putting it to music. I slowed down and let the job go at my own pace, or at my new pace. I made more of my limp. I did less work. No one complained. The place didn't collapse. The emergencies were rare and easily conquered. A leaking pipe, blocked jacks, the odd broken window. I was standing in the yard under my fedora and shoving a brush handle down into a drain that was blocked with the pebbles that were the props in a game the boys had been playing for months. It was raining and warm. The yard sloped very slightly on all sides, to the shore and the drain at the centre. The rain was heavy, the first of the new summer. This was early June, and the yard was starting to flood. I'd been down on my knees and I'd scooped handfuls of the pebbles out of the hole, along with sweet papers and cigarette butts and old bits of bread crust and wood lice and longworms. But there was still enough of the pebbles down there, a dry stone wall of the fucking things, enough to keep damming the rainwater. I was pounding them into wet dust with the butt of the brush. I wasn't enjoying it. Each bash was a boy's soft head. I saw bubbles and more bubbles. I dislodged enough stones and the rainwater rushed for the hole. My working day was more or less over. I started to walk across the yard to my office. The fedora was low on my head, so I didn't see the man. But I saw the feet, the sudden change of direction, the skid to avoid me. I looked up and saw O'Nocton, the teacher in charge of the high babies. He smiled back, terrified. It was out. Mulhare had cried into his pint and told them. The caretaker was one of the men who'd mattered. Young Mulhare would have recovered as he told them the story. He'd have enjoyed the attention. The girls from home, the nurses and clerical officers, would have been there too, with their fizzy minerals. He'd have wiped his nose on the shoulder of one of the nurses. He'd probably got his hole later in her digs, a quick mad ride, still in his shoes and socks, before she had to get him out and let in the rest of the girls who were waiting outside in the rain. So, the lads in the staff room were scared and impressed. They were careful. They'd learnt Mulhare's lesson. But there was also the look I'd brought. They'd seen that as well. Mulhare had got the ride from a fine girl because of me, because of my presence in the story he'd been blubbering that Friday night in one of the new lounge bars where country girls with jobs could sit and stay. He'd have told the lads about that too, proudly, secretly, over the biscuits on Monday morning in the staff room. It had worked for him, it could work for them. The word from old Henry, the benediction. They just needed something to bring with them the next Friday, a story of their own. Not even a story, a greeting or a nod, or the rub of shoulders as we passed in the corridor. That would get them sorted. I saw it after the early shock of Mulhare's story had faded. His big eyes had told them that, as he leaned closer to them and whispered the muck through the steam that rose from their tea. I became their leprechaun and pimp. I set them up with birds I never met. I was a very busy man on Friday afternoons. I patrolled the corridors after the break and kept that fear in the air. I'd got a cobbler in Colester to add nails to one of my boots. They'd hear me coming at them over the wooden tiles, tap, tap. The old IRA man who'd lost his leg for his country, their country. It didn't matter that the hobnails were on the good foot. The noise was what mattered. The nails kept the peace. Some of them got brave and they'd started to shout when they'd hear the extra nails approaching. They'd fill their rooms with sudden, badly acted rage, and sometimes the real stuff too, kept in all week till now. "Do you call that a straight line?" A duster hit the blackboard. "No, no, no, you Amadon!" Sometimes I'd take their bait, just to let them know that the school's flying column was still active. I stood at the doors of their emptied rooms and waited till they knew I was there. More often than not, they'd be waiting for me, trying hard not to look too delighted. "I heard you shouting there," I told them. I was talking to Macaulay, the man in charge of the top sixth class, all 42 of the scholarship boys. "Did you?" he said back. "Yeah." "And?" he said. He was a bit older than the others and under pressure. It was in his eyes, even in the way he walked. He was given the same class, the scholarship lads, every year, because he was good enough and frightening enough to drag results from boys whose parents couldn't read. He was on his own, under a unique pressure. Even his room was away from the others, up its own short stairs, pushing these kids out to secondary school, creating a middle class on the north side of Dublin, for his own good name and the school's. It was relentless. And he'd been under even more pressure since I'd whacked Mulhare, because I wouldn't let him be as frightening as he'd always needed to be. He hadn't biffed a kid in weeks. "I don't mind the odd shout," I said, "but Ramadan, that means Egypt, doesn't it?" "Broadly speaking, yes." I hit him. I punched the side of his face, enough for a bruise, but not hard enough to break or squash anything. His glasses went up over his hair, but they stayed on his head. I stepped right up to him. He was wiping the blackboard with the back of his jumper. "You've your job to do," I told him, "but no kid is an Egypt in any language." He nodded. "You agree with me?" "Yes," he said. "Good man." I watched his face, the terror, delight. He couldn't wait for the bell and his turn to drop a story onto the lounge bar table. He was an ugly cunt, but it wasn't going to matter. "Look," I said, "I understand what you're doing here, but this isn't a war and those kids aren't the British. You understand me?" "Yes, I'm on your side." He was salivating, he was. "Both of us are in this thing together," I told him. Mulhare and the boys would be outside waiting for him. One of the cars was his. "Enjoy your weekend," I told him. He didn't have weekends. He brought the boys in on Saturdays. He had his own keys and he did all his corrections on Sundays. But he had his Friday nights. I walked out. For 15 years, the boys' national school in Raheen was the most civilized place in the country. No child was slapped, except on the days when I stayed at home. I'd made my own republic inside the railings of the school. It was a good life. I was tempted to ban subtraction. Addition and multiplication were grand, two and two, but there'd be no place for taking away in my republic. But I didn't do it. I couldn't ban reality, the hard knocks and grief that were waiting beyond the railings. Two and two was four, two from two was fuck all. It was the complete package. I didn't want to mould them. They'd be well able to do that for themselves. They eventually left for secondary school or the tech or the building sites, and the poor little fuckers didn't know what happened as the Christian Brothers and other outside forces got their maulers on them. But the years in my school were enough. There was another way, and they went through their lives knowing that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.